305, Jeff Katz, News Radio WRVA. It is Tuesday. It is toasty. It's 90 degrees as we speak. And the big, beautiful bill has passed. Thank you, Vice President J.D. Vance. Heads back over to the House of Representatives now. And I got to tell you something. I got to tell you something. There's a lot of misinformation that's out there, and some of it really pains me. I mean, really, really pains me. I am about as active and as passionate and involved as you can get when it comes to the disability world. You know that, right? So when I get an email from the ARC of the United States, I open it up. I pay attention to certain email addresses, some more than others. Some I look at and think, well, you know, they're going to be asking me for money, or it's some sort of spam, or my life can go on just fine without taking a look at this. But when I get an email from the ARC of the United States, I look at it. I got a note from the ARC of the United States at 2:17 this afternoon, and to put it in the most polite, gracious, friendly terms, I'm outraged. Oh, I'm not outraged because they sent me an email. I'm absolutely outraged and livid about the manner in which they are presenting what is in the email. Now, the ARC, you may or may not know, the ARC started out, ARC, it was the Association for Retarded Children. And then it became the Association for Retarded Citizens, and there was a time when everybody said, you know, that term is, it's outdated, it's offensive for those of us who have disabled kiddos. Let me tell you, that term kind of hits us like a punch in the gut. So many years ago, they changed the name. It just became the ARC. Okay. Those of us that know some history, know what the original name was, know why it was changed, and I'm all good with that. It says right here, for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. Fantastic. I'm all about that. I know there are plenty of people who are in that arena, but I'll put myself up against, I think, just about anybody in terms of activities and support and involvement in doing exactly that, in helping people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. So I read what this says. I'm going to share it with you. It says, an update on the fight to protect Medicaid. What happened? The Senate just passed the budget bill, and it's bad. The bill includes nearly $1 trillion in Medicaid cuts. That's about 20% of the federal Medicaid budget. It would cause nearly 17 million people to lose coverage. Nearly $200 billion in cuts to SNAP. Less food assistance means more people will go hungry, including millions of kids. A new private school voucher program that redirects public education funding to private schools. This will make it even harder with children with disabilities to access essential special education services. Well, that's just not really correct. Even the numbers are off, but you know what? Let's play in their ballpark just for the sake of the conversation. $1 trillion in Medicaid cuts. Okay, so let's say that's what it is. How exactly are those cuts going to be achieved? Jeff, they're clearly they're just slicing people willy-nilly. They're not. This has to do with a presence on the Medicaid rolls of people who do not belong on the Medicaid rolls. Anybody remember when Bill Clinton had his pants on and he was the president of the United States? Okay. Bill Clinton said able-bodied people receiving Medicaid and other public assistance, such as welfare, need to work or go to school. That is exactly what this measure does. In fact, having analyzed it a little bit, and as you know, I'm a bit of a policy wonk on stuff like this, these requirements are less stringent, less demanding than the requirements that Bill Clinton had way back when. Could we see nearly 17 million people lose coverage? Well, it's possible. Who would those 17 million people be? Jeff, they're going to be kids, just like your daughter Julia. Except, no, that is not correct. These are requirements that would be in place for folks who are not disabled. Specifically, directed at people who are not disabled. Specifically directed at people who are able-bodied, who could go out and find some sort of employment or some sort of education. Well, you want these people to work full-time and overtime? We do not. It'd be nice if they got a full-time job. That'd be great. The requirement as it stands now is 80 hours per month. And that can be either employment or education. So some of the folks who are receiving some of these benefits, who are able-bodied but are thinking, you know, I'm in a profession where there's not a lot of hiring going on. Although we just got numbers today that indicate there was a huge increase in hiring, well above what had been expected, 7.8 million jobs created in the past month, as opposed to 7.4 million. Many of them were in the food sector. Okay, all right, I know, hospitality jobs, it's not a career. But you know what the other one was in? Essentially half of those jobs in finance and insurance. Those are good paying jobs. So the reality is, no, we're not going to kick people off of Medicaid. We are going to have some standards for Medicaid. Those people who are able-bodied will need to demonstrate that they are working, going to school, actively looking for work. It's not that difficult, and it is not an onerous requirement by any stretch of the imagination. All right, what about SNAP and what about education funding? Well, I'm going to tackle those in just a moment. I want to remind you, hit me up on the James River Air text line, 833-804-1140, 833-804-1140. Let me know what your thoughts are. Have you ever received any sort of services like this? I know. Because of Julia, what is involved with a lot of this, I know how some people are able to avail themselves of services that, quite frankly, they shouldn't have. There's plenty of fraud that goes on. And this is about trying to rein in some of that fraud. It's also about convincing people that they need to make a move, essentially, from welfare to work or from welfare into education, into some sort of training. Pardon my language, but there's not a damn thing wrong with any of this. All right, we'll talk about the SNAP cuts that the ARC is talking about. We'll talk about the education funding that they address in this email. And I'll let you know some of the other details that just don't seem to be getting out. It is 3:15, Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRBA. Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRBA. It is Tuesday, and where are we? We're holding steady like a 90 degrees. It is definitely toasty. It's going to be with us for a little bit. In fact, right through September or October, okay? So I just wanted to clear that up. I hear, well, how long is it going to? It's going to be hot. I mean, it's Central Virginia in the summer. So there you have it. It's not it's not exactly a mystery. It is what it is. Now, having said all of that, let me get back to this piece of information that I got, this email I got from the ARC of the United States, and remind you that Joe Moreno, smartest lawyer on God's green earth, is going to be here at 3:35. President Trump has racked up a whole slew of big-time wins at the Supreme Court, and I want to get Joe to analyze each of them for us, let us know what they mean, how they're going to play out, but he'll do that at 3:35. So back to this email, it says, nearly $200 billion in cuts to SNAP. Less food assistance means more people will go hungry, including millions of kids. Okay. I mean, it's an interesting comment, but there's nothing there to back it up. And again, is this directed at people? Is it directed at families who legitimately need our help with food stamps? The answer is no. Once again, this is an effort to rein in fraud and abuse. Will there be some people who lose SNAP benefits? Absolutely. Will those be people who needed the SNAP benefits, who were entitled to the SNAP benefits legitimately? No. You can be as upset as you'd like if you talk about people losing Medicaid or losing SNAP. But let's be clear who it is of whom you speak. You are speaking of able-bodied people who should either be working or in school, or you are talking about criminals, illegal aliens. You may have no problem at all rewarding criminals for criminal behavior, but it is the rest of us who have to pay for that. And that's what this is about. Finally, it says a new private school voucher program that redirects public education funding to private schools. This will make it even harder for children with disabilities to access essential special education services. And again, I would say that is not true. It's simply not true. Each school division is bound by certain federal laws. Talk about IDEA. We talk about other federal laws which direct school divisions to provide special education services for children between the ages of 5 and 22. This does not change that. There are some school divisions which are not happy about having to provide special education services. Many of us know that. How do we know that? Because we've seen it firsthand. Would you like to know why we chose to move to Hanover County as opposed to Henrico County or Chesterfield County? Because as nice as the human beings are in Henrico County and Chesterfield County, fine human beings, fine people, great, wonderful friends, we heard all sorts of horror stories about special ed services in each of those counties. I encountered firsthand how disinterested the Henrico County Public Schools were when it came to discussing Julia or dealing with her IEP. They made it very clear. We were simply another number, and they weren't all that thrilled about getting another number. Chesterfield County, I thought, was far friendlier, but everybody said it's all school by school. When we reached out to Hanover County and actually chatted, I chatted with the assistant superintendent for special ed. I was never treated better in all of my life when it came to accessing services for Julia. So it was easy for us to make that decision that Hanover County was right for us because of the schools. It was right for us because of the excellent county management and the Hanover County Sheriff's Office, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm simply saying to you, if, like me, you are in that disability area and you've gotten this email from the ARC, I know they're great people at the ARC, and I'm not trying to dismiss some of the great work they've done, but this email couldn't possibly be more wrong. It is 325, Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA. Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA. It is Tuesday. President Trump is... he's scoring some major victories. There's some big wins last night or early this morning, however you want to phrase it, became officially official, right? President Trump got a big victory with the passage of that big, beautiful bill. Vice President Vance stepping in, casting the vote. It goes back to the House now. They got to, I guess, hammer out a few details here and there, but there is that deadline that the president imposed and everybody seems to be going along with of Independence Day, July the 4th. So we'll see how that plays out. Okay, looking forward to that. Craig Peterson will be along just about an hour from now. We're going to talk about tech and staying safe online, and maybe he can really honestly tell me what the heck I gotta pony up for now that my laptop has, what's the technical term? Pooped out. I think that's what the tech guy said. It's just gone, dead. It's a paperweight. So I'll get some advice from Craig. I mentioned that President Trump's had a number of victories, lots of them at the Supreme Court. Well, we've got to talk about some legal issues. Who better to bring into this than the smartest lawyer on God's green earth, a friend of mine, former federal prosecutor, Joe Moreno. I'm always thrilled when he's got time for us. Counselor, good afternoon, sir.
Jeff, how are you, sir? Speaking to you from sunny Orlando, where I hear the weather is better than where it is in Virginia right now, I'm told.
Well, yeah, Orlando in July. Okay, so you should be expecting 10 minutes worth of showers at any time, and then you'll be back to your regularly scheduled excursions, right?
That sounds about right. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Well, I, number one, I appreciate you even taking the time while you're out of town and all, but give us a little lay of the land with the Supreme Court. The president has had some pretty big victories, right?
Well, Jeff, I think that, you know, normally the end of the Supreme Court term is exciting for us lawyers who really follow this stuff. But This time around, there were some really significant developments that affect a whole lot of people. And there was a lot of attention on some of these. I would start moving backward with what was called the sort of birthright citizenship case.
Yes.
The case of Trump v. Casa, which is one that a lot of folks were focusing on regarding the 14th Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, what the case did was it did not make a decision regarding how to read the 14th Amendment and how far the right of citizenship applied to those who were born in the United States. That's still an open question, believe it or not, even though the 14th Amendment was passed in 1868, never been specifically ruled on. But what the court did take head on was this idea of nationwide injunctions, basically the idea that any district judge among all 680 of them nationwide could issue an injunction, basically put a case, freeze a case in its tracks, not just for the parties before that judge, but for anybody, anywhere in the same situation. And this had been done in the past sort of selectively over the last couple of, 20 years or so, but it had really been relied on heavily in the first Trump administration, and especially in the second Trump administration, were really issues of immigration, issues of taxation, issues of DOGE access to information were all being held up by something like 40 different injunctions by district judges nationwide.
Okay. Now, this is, we've talked about it in the past, this is where Democrats, for the most part, for the last 6 months, have said, okay, we didn't win the House, we didn't win the Senate, we didn't win the White House, but we still want our policies in place. We're going to find a very friendly district court judge, and he or she is just going to issue this blanket order that all of a sudden covers everybody.
That's right. It was sort of their last tool in their arsenal, and they used it very, very aggressively. And so we went something like 200 years in this country where this sort of thing never happened. And then all of a sudden, in the last decade and a half, they've been kind of piling on. They realized it was a way, if you got a sympathetic judge, and they were very selective about which districts and which judges to bring their cases to, you could get a ruling that basically grinds things to a halt coming out of the White House. And I give Donald Trump credit. I mean, he, you know, there were accusations that he was going to defy the judges and defy the courts, and he never did that. I'm sure it was tempting, because I know this was being abused, but he did not do that. And he, you know, he kind of held his sort of fire under control, and he ultimately won at the court. And I'm glad the Supreme Court didn't take 2 years. It resolved this in, what, 6 months maybe?
That's right.
And that's a great thing. And look, I think that everyone recognizes that there are situations where the courts need to step in, right, if Congress or the executive branch is abusing the law. But the courts themselves should not be abused as a mechanism by saying, rather than go to Congress and change a law, we're going to halt the execution of the law by using a sympathetic judge. That kind of thing, just the government cannot function like this. And it's a good job by the Supreme Court for stepping in and stopping this practice.
Well, I'm thrilled to hear that. I think everybody is. We hear the details on it. Joe Moreno is joining us, former federal prosecutor, our go-to guy when it comes to everything related to the law. Lots of things coming down from the Supreme Court. What about this dust-up involving Supreme Court Justice Amy Coney Barrett and Ketanji Brown Jackson? Because even I, as a layman, I read Justice Barrett's decision or opinion. I'm not even sure what it's officially called, but good Lord, she just dismantled her co-worker there in epic fashion, I thought.
Well, you can see that, you know, beyond the sort of layer of decorum, you can tell there's some pretty significant personality clashes among the nine justices.
Yeah.
And they're usually pretty professional among each other, but it did get kind of nasty, at least for Supreme Court standards. Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson wrote a pretty, let's say, hyperbolic dissenting opinion, where she basically said in kind of apocalyptic terms that this cessation of universal injunctions would be lead to an imperial dictatorship, and it would allow the White House to do all kinds of crazy things. And Justice Amy Coney Barrett, who wrote for the majority, where they can kind of comment on the dissenting opinions, in, you know, back and forth, she said, look, again, we went two centuries without this practice, and we were just fine.
Yeah.
So the idea that now things are going to kind of all go crazy because we're stopping this hand-picking of judges who are, of course, unelected, who can effectively put a hold on the elected president's actions nationwide, that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. And so there was some pretty vicious jarring between the two of them, and I'd recommend anyone who's interested in this sort of thing, look it up. It's definitely worth a read.
One of her payoff lines was, I better paraphrase, but it was essentially, okay, so, Madam Justice, you hate the idea of the imperial presidency, but the imperial judiciary, full speed ahead.
Right. You're okay with, you want to constrain the elected president, but you're perfectly fine with out of control judges. And yeah, it was a great zinger. It's an unfortunate addressing of the hyperbole coming from the left. And I think we've seen this just think about this the last month or so. We talked about some of these issues, right? We talked about the deployment of the National Guard by President Trump to California to control the riots.
Yeah. Yep.
And there was a screaming that that was an imperial presidency, and he was abusing the military. Right. Then there were the strikes on the Iranian nuclear facilities. And they said, oh, he should be impeached. This was unconstitutional, right? And now there's this decision by a progressive justice who says, the world, the country's going to end now. We're no longer a democracy because we've ended universal injunctions. And it's just, they gotta calm down. Because if everything is a crisis, if everything is a 10 out of 10, then nothing is really a crisis. And so, where do we go from here? I mean, it's one thing to be political. It's one thing to sort of posture for your own position. But if you're constantly using this apocalyptic rhetoric, especially from judges, it's really not a good path we're going down.
No, that becomes so dangerous. Now, Joe, you mentioned that normally at the end here, there's an exciting time for you guys, you lawyers, you know who you people are, but for the rest of us people, there's some other stuff coming down from the court. What are the other big decisions that we should be paying attention to?
I would point out two others that we were waiting on, and they really turned out to be, I think, for us more conservative-leaning folks, they were really good outcomes. One was the case out of Montgomery County in Maryland. It was Taylor v. Mahmoud, which basically was the question about whether or not children attending public schools could be required to read and be introduced to materials regarding LGBT, transgender-type themes. And it wasn't just that they were being exposed to the information, but that there was an actual script that teachers were instructed to read so that if a child asked certain questions about, let's say, these characters and these stories, the teachers had pre-programmed responses. And it really kind of impinged on people's religious views about this topic. It's obviously a hot topic, yes, mm-hmm. which is why you would think the public schools would just kind of want to stay out of it, maybe.
That's right.
And kind of stick to math and literature, right, and science, and kind of avoid these hot-button topics. Maryland, in its wisdom, first allowed an opt-out for parents, which sounds reasonable, and then they reversed themselves. And now, you know what? That's too difficult. No opt-outs allowed. All children have to be exposed to this material. So it worked its way to the Supreme Court, and thankfully, in a common-sense 6-3 decision, the court said, oh, no, you're impinging too far on people's individual religious freedom, and you cannot force children who, of course, many families don't have the option to send their kids to private school. They have to go to public school.
Right.
And to be forced to be exposed to things that really violate a family's religious views. And these weren't just Catholics. These were Orthodox. These were Muslim families who all banded together to block this material.
Excellent.
So it was a common sense decision by the court. It was something that if the state of Maryland and Montgomery County had really kind of had more common sense, they would have stuck to the opt-out to begin with. But you know what? I'm glad the Supreme Court came to its senses and corrected the situation.
Absolutely. Now, you have talked about, and we've all seen, these 6-3 decisions. Is this where we're headed for all the people that were very, very concerned about Amy Coney Barrett? Are they able or to look at these decisions and say, oh, okay, she's kind of in with the crowd, with the in crowd?
I think the nervousness was always sort of blown out of proportion. Remember, the ultimate case was the Dobbs case back in 2022. And we had the same 6-3 coalition. So she was a solid choice. I think people have to kind of tone it down. She's a textualist. She's a conservative. She does like protocol.
Yes.
So I think in the times that we've not been happy with her have been times not so much that she ruled with the progressives, but that she forced cases to go through the entire appellate process. She doesn't like the emergency docket where basically you fast track cases. But at the end of the day, when it comes to substance, she's been a reliable conservative vote. So I think a lot of the sort of consternation about her was misplaced.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad to hear that. I think she's still solid. On a personal note there, Joe, are you in Orlando with the entire Moreno gang enjoying themselves?
No, afraid not. My wife is home with the kids by herself down here on a few days of Army Reserve duty, which despite my advanced age, I'm still say I'm proud to do.
Well, we are grateful to you for doing it. Make no mistake. Joe, I appreciate you being here. I hope that you and everybody in your family and your circle will enjoy Independence Day, reflect on what it is. And again, you always have my gratitude to you for making time for us here. We really do appreciate it.
Jeff, always my pleasure. Happy Independence Day, sir.
Thank you, sir. That is Joe Moreno. Joe is down there. Yep, Joe is active military reserve. Let me see. I'm trying to think. I think lieutenant colonel, major. I don't know. I don't want to give him a field promotion. I'd have to take something away from him. But he's an attorney in the Army, as well as an attorney in private practice. A former federal prosecutor, and I got to tell you, just one of the smartest guys you are ever going to interact with. Craig Peterson will join us at 4:35. Looking forward to chatting with him. We'll talk about tech and staying safe online, and I will have to ask him if I could purchase another Windows-based device. Would that be the end of the world, or could I somehow figure out a way to make it work and be safe? I don't know. I'm going to wait till he has an answer on that. Tomorrow morning, 6 a.m., please make sure you're listening to Richmond's Morning News with Rich Herrera. You will guarantee you get a lot out of it. There's a lot of information, a lot of wonderful people passing through the program. You want to hear what they have to say. Again, that's tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. with my friend Rich Herrera, Richmond's Morning News, starting at 6 a.m. tomorrow. It is Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRBA. Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA, Tuesday afternoon. Remember those thunderstorms I mentioned? Yeah, they're here. Literally, as I was walking out the door, boom! And yes, now I am drenched. It's nice. It's not. I had already showered today, but shower number two was okay. So that's what's happening in Hanover. I would imagine wherever you happen to be, whether it's Henrico or the city or Chesterfield or what have you, Goochland, Powhatan, you're going to see exactly the same things. Now that I am basing today's program on emails I have received, let me share with you an email I just received from an organization called the Virginia Nurses Association. 4 p.m. Virginia Nurses Association celebrates landmark maternal health legislation taking effect July 1. Okay. Well, you know, my mom was a nurse. I love nurses. And no offense to my friend and my doctor, Dr. Bob Quarles, Threshold Medical down in Midlothian. I love nurses more than doctors. Why? Well, my mom always told me that doctors cared about symptoms. Nurses cared about people. They cared about patients. So I love nurses. I appreciate nurses. 1,000 years ago when I was a cop, where did I spend a lot of time? The emergency room. Why? Because that's part of being a cop. Every single male cop was chatting with every single female nurse, just the way it was. But anyway, I love what nurses do. I appreciate what nurses do. So when I saw the Virginia Nurses Association, I thought, well, I got to open this up. It's going to be interesting because, you know, it's nurses in Virginia. I'm in Virginia and I love nurses. So here's what it says for immediate release from Elle Buck. She is the Communications and Advocacy Manager. Don't know what that means, but okay. Virginia Nurses Association celebrates landmark maternal health legislation taking effect July 1, Richmond, Virginia. The Virginia Nurses Association applauds the passage of the VNA-supported Virginia Momnibus legislation, a sweeping package of 12 bills aimed at improving maternal health outcomes and advancing equity in care across the Commonwealth. Ooh, there's that word. Remember, equity is not equality. It's a world of difference, and equity in the year 2025 has really become a political term. This historic legislation, which goes into effect July 1, 2025, marks a significant investment in maternal health infrastructure, services, and workforce development. The Virginia Momnibus includes critical measures to reduce maternal mortality, increase access to culturally competent care. Now, I don't know about you. I'm not exactly sure what L. Buck means by culturally competent. I want my nurses knowing about care. What does culturally competent mean? And does that relate to medical care? Well, I don't know, but apparently important enough that L. Buck puts it in there. And finally, and this is the line that I have to tell you, is the payoff, which will now indicate to me that perhaps the Virginia Nurses Association is an organization not worthy of paying attention to as I move forward. Ensure that more birthing people. Can we stop right there? Birthing people. Wouldn't you mean women? If you are a nurse and you are unaware of the fact that women become pregnant and women become mothers, if you are a nurse and you believe that a male can become pregnant or you believe that a male can give birth, I would say that you should no longer be a nurse. I would say that the Virginia Board of Nursing should immediately revoke your license to practice nursing in the Commonwealth. There are certain basic things that nurses and other medical professionals need to be aware of. And referring to, quote, birthing people is stupid. Women, well, let's not even take it to females. The female of the species is capable of becoming pregnant. The female of the species is capable of carrying the baby. The female of the species is capable of giving birth. The female of the species can produce milk for the baby. There are certain things that only women can do. Becoming a mother, giving birth, is one of them, Virginia Nurses Association, L. Buck. I'm appalled. I'm appalled. Ensure that more birthing people, especially in historically underserved communities, can receive safe, high-quality care throughout pregnancy and postpartum. And it goes on to talk about some other things. And you know what? Here's the problem. I won't even bother at this point paying attention to the rest of it, which is a shame, because it might actually be very important stuff. But honestly, if you want to put yourself forward as a nurses organization, and you want to pretend that men can get pregnant, I can't take you seriously anymore. You know what? I couldn't help myself. I actually scrolled a little bit further. So here's one of the things that they take great pride in at the Virginia Nurses Association. There's a special enrollment period now for, quote, a pregnant qualified individual. Once again, I would say you mean a woman. You mean a mother-to-be, a mom, a lady, a female. That's all. I don't know why there is this nonsense, this craziness, this ridiculous attitude that says, well, yeah, of course a man, you know, a man cannot get pregnant. Whether you like that or you don't like it, but I don't really care. There are just certain things that are true. And that's one of them. And if you're feeling bad for those of us who are guys who can't get pregnant, because guys can't get pregnant, I will tell you that women, the female of the species, cannot actually personally impregnate another female of the species. You're still going to need a guy of some sort. That's the way this whole thing was created. And it seems to work pretty well. And it's worked really well for a long, long time. But I'm sorry. No, I'm not sorry. I just can't take an organization seriously if they want to use the term birthing people. It's nonsensical. I saw something the other day that was reminding women who are masquerading as men to be sure that they get a prostate exam. Well, yeah, absolutely. There's a good investment right there. By all means, yeah, you should get that prostate exam. Now, it's not going to be your prostate because you're a lady and therefore you do not have a prostate. It's a little bit like me getting a screening for some sort of ovarian cancer. It's not going to work. Here's a suggestion. It comes from your friendly old Uncle Jeff. Let's all grow up and live in the real world. Work for you? It works for me. 415, Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA. .436, Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA. It is Tuesday. Now, it's cooled off a little bit. We're down to 82, but that's because of the torrential thunderstorms that are rolling through. Overnight lows about 70, and the thunderstorms, one way or another, just so you know, they're going to be with us through this afternoon, through this evening, through the overnight, right through the morning commute. Another reason, if you needed one, to tune in the morning. Take a listen to Richmond's Morning News with Rich Herrera. Rich is doing a good job. He's a friend, and I want you to make sure you tune into him first thing tomorrow at 6, especially with the weather being what it is. My laptop is dead. It's official. I'm going to update my friend Craig Peterson on that. Now, oh, yeah, we'll talk about some other stuff, more important stuff for everybody, but I want him to join in my misery. I mean, why should I be the only one? Good afternoon, Craig.
Hey, I heard you've been kind of shopping around your laptop repair here.
Yes, and here's what the laptop guy at Nerds2Go told me. A technical term. He said it's broken, and that's it. Now, I think there was one other term he might have used, but I don't think I can use that here. So they took out the hard drive. The hard drive is going to the data recovery magicians to hopefully recover the data. But the rest of the laptop itself, in addition to the hard drive being toast or whatever it is, the battery was going. And his rule of thumb, and I thought it sounded like a good one, he said, look, if it's going to cost more than $300 to repair it, I say don't bother repairing it. I say get yourself a new one. So the cost to repair it was well in excess of that. So the body of the laptop has now been passed on to a great group we have here, Craig, called Tech for Troops. And it's they take older tech pieces and they repurpose them and they renew them and they give them to deserving veterans. So, yeah, you know, I'm miserable about the one part, but I'm really happy about the end stage user, you know?
Yeah. So you're telling me that you're taking your broken laptop and giving it to the troops? That's nice of you.
Well, there is this whole stop in the middle where the Tech for Troops folks will actually turn it into a working laptop again. See, I may have skipped right over that
part. Okay, so you didn't bother doing that first. You're going to let them do it. I see how this goes, Jeff. Yeah, I'm learning here.
Yeah, exactly. And the hard drive. Did you know, Craig, that hard drives are now like they're not even the size of a 3x5 card. They're tiny.
Oh, yeah. Well, then they're not even drives anymore. Well, they're not spinning drives anymore. Oh. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're all solid state now, most of them. They don't last as long as the old spinning drives. That is, unless you keep dropping the drives, and then the spinning drives are, you know, don't last long when you drop them. But yeah, nowadays you're talking about SSDs for the most part. There's some really fast drives that you don't usually use them in a laptop, but you could, that are not all solid state. So there's a lot you can do. And I'm not going to bother reminding you that about 2 months ago, I told you about Backblaze and that you needed to install it and use it. So I'm not going to mention that because I don't want you to feel bad.
Thank you. I appreciate that because I have run out of tissues. Now here's the flip side, and this ties right into what is the very first story in your Insider newsletter this week. The guy at Nerds2Go, when I told him, I said, well, I just want to know if they recover the data, are they going to be able to put it on a new laptop that is an Apple product? And he asked, well, why on earth would you go to an Apple product? And then he proceeded to tell me all the things that are bad about Apple. You cannot work on them. Everything is welded to the motherboard, and it's just anything you're going to find in the Mac world, you'll find in the Windows world. And then I open your newsletter, Microsoft Windows 11 Lies. So who's right, you or the guy at Nerds2Go?
Well, the Nerds guy is mostly correct there in that, yes, the new Apple or laptops, and this is true of kind of their desktop machines too, like the Mac Minis, but everything in them is, they don't weld it to the motherboard, but they do solder it on, directly on. Okay. And the idea behind this, and it's really good thinking on their part, is first of all, we mentioned dropping the laptop, right? So it's going to be more stable, but it also allows it to be a whole lot faster. So Apple is actually putting the memory in the main computer chip. That's why it's so much faster. And as far as if you can find it in the Apple world, you can find something equivalent in the Windows world. That is true. However, the Windows equivalent is actually going to be more expensive than the Apple equivalent if it really is equivalent, right? So it's like going out there. You can buy a car. You can get a Yugo. They're probably expensive nowadays because they don't make them anymore. But, for a lot cheaper, then you can get a really nice, great new car.
Yeah.
So there's truth in what he said, right? But remember what business he's in. He's in the business of upgrading computers,
true,
right? So he likes to go in and he can add more memory to the laptop. He can pop out that disk and put in a new one. Yeah, that's the business he's in. You cannot do that with the Apple stuff anymore. It's also true of some of the Windows computers, particularly the Surface tablets, those type of tablets. You can't replace memory or upgrade it, etc. So an important safety tip is when you are buying a Mac, as I've mentioned this so many times over the years, get the biggest computer you can afford. And that's true with Windows as well. But it's going to last longer for you because it has more processing power or it has more memory or more storage space. So as far as your files and getting them back, the answer is, you can put them onto a Mac or you can put them onto a Windows computer. It really doesn't matter. But what I would ask him, I don't know what he's trying to do to recover your disk. You know, it can get very expensive very quickly. But if he's not like taking the hard disk itself apart in a clean room and trying to fix internal parts to the hard disk, I'll ask him to put it onto just a USB drive for you. Because then you can just plug it into your Mac or plug it into Windows computer or something else, copy your files over to where you want them, and then you're up and running. But that's exactly what happened with Backblaze. You know, if you had been using it at the time, and I know you're going to use it next time, if you had been using it at the time, they'll send you a hard disk, a USB drive, with all your files on it. You just plug it into your new computer, and you're off and running. they do a really great job, but you know what can you do now?
Well, besides weeping and gnashing my teeth, not much. So I am starting my subscription to Backblaze even before I have a new computer because I don't want to take any chances. But what about the Windows lies? Microsoft Windows 11 lies. Do I or do I not trust Microsoft Windows if, in fact, I do that?
You never, no, don't ever trust Microsoft, right? They're getting sued yet again. Oh. Google's getting sued yet again in Europe. They lie. Look, Internet Explorer, they tied it into the operating system and said, oh, no, it has to be in there. You have to have Internet Explorer. After various lawsuits, we found out, no, that's not true. Privacy, they said, well, Windows is very private. We don't keep any of the information. And yet, every time they do an upgrade, particularly now with Windows 11, it spends most of its time spying on you. It's terrible. They said, Windows is secure. We've secured it. We've got wonderful antivirus software on there now. And it is pretty darn good, by the way. But most of their settings provide no privacy for you out there. Copilot and Copilot Plus, they are pushing that really, really hard. But Microsoft, what they're doing with some of these Copilot features is the worst thing possible by screenshotting your computer every number of seconds out there, storing it locally, making now your computer a target for everything because everything is sitting there on your computer. And yet they're saying, oh, no, it's secure. I remember I got a mailing from Microsoft back when people used U.S. mail for this stuff. And I still have the card that said, if you're running Office on your Windows computer, your computer is now secure. What does that have to do with security? It's Office, right? So now what they're lying about is Windows 11 itself. And they have a little tool you can run that says, oh, yeah, your computer, can you do Windows 11? They don't bother checking your device drivers, the hardware that's in your computer for video. They don't check the third-party software that's incompatible. They don't check any of this stuff. So little old me, I wrote a checker that tells you if you are compatible with Windows 11 or not, and it's 100% free. I've done this, Jeff, because I know our listeners are confused. It even goes so far as to give you some indications of compromise. It tells you if your laptop looks like it's being compromised by a hoser out there. So all of that stuff, really important, absolutely free. You can sign up. Just click the link in my newsletter or go to win11ready.com. And I'm going to have a little webinar, going to help you install it and run it and explain what all of this stuff means. Because Windows, Microsoft is once again not being straight with anybody.
Wow. But at least I know that my passwords are secure, right? Except that they're deleting my passwords. What exactly does that mean? How can Microsoft delete my passwords?
Isn't this something? These guys are so arrogant. It's crazy. You thought Apple was arrogant. I know a lot of people don't want to use Apple because, oh, Apple's arrogant. Well, yeah, Microsoft is really taking the bacon on this one. And what they're saying is, hey, you know, passwords are inherently insecure. Yeah, they should know, right? Because of what they've been doing for so long. And they're right. They are, right? And a lot of people use the same password on different websites, and they use the same one for Facebook as they do for their bank, and it's kind of crazy. So Microsoft next month is going to start forcing you to use their pass keys. So the most secure thing that you can do is to have something you know along with something you have. So that's what Passkey is all about. This is not a Microsoft innovation, by the way. They're just following the lead. Apple's had something that's just as effective now for about 2 or 3 years. But so what you have now is you have your username and password, which is something you know.
Right.
And then you have your face identification or your fingerprint or your smartphone with a PIN. That's something you have. So something you know combined with something you have. So when the hosers get your username and password, they can't do anything because they don't have your phone, they don't have your face, they don't have any of that stuff. So Microsoft, I'll give them kudos on this one because it is a move in the right direction. Passkeys can be really confusing. I've got some points here, four points in the newsletter, things you can do in order to help protect yourself. But they're just going to force everybody, just like they've been saying they're going to force the Windows 11 upgrade. Although news this week is that's not quite true either.
Well, we don't have time for every one of Windows lies. So what I would urge people to do is get signed up for your newsletter. Would you like to remind everybody how they do it, my friend?
Absolutely. This is my free newsletter. You can get it at craigpeterson.com. Just go right there, put your name and email in, and I'll send you this week's. It's got a lot of great info in it. And all of the future free newsletters right there, which is usually a weekly ordeal.
I love it. Nah, not an ordeal at all. We everybody I know loves getting them and reading them and learning a lot. Craig, I appreciate you being here as always. That is Craig Peterson. If you are not yet signed up for his newsletter, believe me, if a Luddite like me is capable of getting a lot from it, you will as well. CraigPeterson.com. CraigPeterson.com. Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA. Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA. It's a Tuesday afternoon. The skies have cleared. I'm dry. All is right with the world, but the thunderstorms are definitely coming back, so just heads up on that. And they are going to be with us from right now, right through the morning commute. So another good reason, tune in tomorrow morning at 6, Richmond's Morning News with Rich Herrera. Listening this morning, and Rich was looking for sandwich suggestions. You know, Rich is still relatively new to the area. He's been here for, I don't know, 6 months or something like that, 7 months. And I know he's got his son coming in to visit, so he's looking for some cool stuff to do. He's already had the Jeff Katz sandwich from Jake's Place. So, quite frankly, every other sandwich in Central Virginia is going to pale in comparison. However, I think he probably needs to find a decent sailor sandwich. And for my money, anyway, I would say Dots Back In would be the way to do that, don't you? Germ, you've been to, everybody's been to Dots, right? But Dots Back In over on MacArthur in Bellevue, they've got a good sailor sandwich, and that is definitely a Richmond classic. So I'm going to suggest that to him. I think I'm on tomorrow morning. I'm visiting on the morning show, so looking forward to that. Some sort of a decision in the Puff Daddy, P. Diddy sex trafficking case. As those details come down, I'll get them to you. 4:56, Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRBA. Jeff Katz. News Radio WRVA. It is Tuesday. There you go. It is Tuesday. It's kind of toasty. 80, 81. More thunderstorms rolling through. Again, the thunderstorms simply with us the evening, the overnight, well into the morning commute, they're saying. So you'll want to be aware of that. And another good reason to tune in first thing tomorrow morning, 6 a.m., Richmond's Morning News with Rich Herrera. Coming up in about a half an hour, buddy of mine, Ryan Hudson. Ryan is on the Hanover County Board of Supervisors. And I am curious to know about the water issues that are still being discussed. I want to know about these pay raises. The Hanover County Board of Education voted to increase their own salaries. They doubled them, which is kind of neat, but I'm thinking there's got to be some sort of a backstory. So Ryan is going to join us at 5:35. And while I am talking about Hanover County, my beloved Hanover County, the greatest place on God's green earth. And again, I remind you, we are all filled up. We have no more room. You can come and visit. We're happy to have you visit. And leave some money here, please. And then get out. That's all. John Badeski, who, once again, for my money, my tax money, the best county administrator anywhere. He is today celebrating his fifth anniversary, 5 years as the county manager for Hanover County. And I know you got other counties, other municipalities trying to steal him all the time. So we are very, very fortunate to have him here. He is a good, good guy. There's some sort of a decision coming down in the P. Diddy criminal prosecution. We don't have the details as of yet. When we do, I'll pass them along. Some sort of a, quote, partial verdict. What did the trial prove? I didn't watch a lot of it. I've read some of it. I think it proved that he's an absolutely reprehensible Delta Bravo, a horrible human being, and a, what's the technical term? Dirtbag. Yes, dirtbag, I think, would be what Delta Bravo stands for, just so you know. But I don't know if that means he's guilty of RICO. Was he running a criminal enterprise? That I don't know. I didn't pay close enough attention. I don't want to lie about it. But we will see exactly what happens. And we'll join that live. We have the federal prosecutor is going to be out there. Germ, I just sent you a phone number, and you need to call that ASAP. I repeat, ASAP, and get my friend Mindy booked ASAP. If we've got room tomorrow, we got room on Friday Eve, that would be a great place to put her. I've told Mindy's story a couple of times on the air, and again, she's legitimately a friend, so there's some new developments in the matter, and we need to get her back as soon as possible there, Germ. Taking a look at the James River Air text line, 833-804-1140, 833-804-1140. Ken in Chesterfield says, Mr. Katz, oh, just call me Jeff. Mr. Katz, a friend had two hard drives crash with no backup. He sent both drives off to data recovery vendors. In both cases, most of his data was recovered. I hope your results are the same. Thank you, Ken. I, too, hope that that is exactly the case. 804, wow, Jeff, Richmond is just a den of thieves, aren't they? Hearing now about the fuel card mess. It just doesn't end. It doesn't end. Every time you think you have heard the latest, biggest, worst scandal of all time in the city of Richmond, somebody there at City Hall says, here, hold our non-drinkable water. And then they come out with another one. So what's the latest one is the gas card scandal. God. Different 804. Jeff, fake news right now melting down over President Trump visiting alligator Alcatraz. Yeah, he's down in Florida. Was it 8 days? Governor Ron DeSantis and his team put together this holding facility for illegal aliens. Going to make the state of Florida huge, huge money. 804, Jeff, listening to you talk about your emails from the ARC of the United States and the Virginia Nurses Association. The whole idea is just to create chaos, destroy our faith in every institution, family, church, academia, government, one big psyop aimed at the willfully ignorant, misinformed, and brainwashed masses. Wow. Yeah, I don't know. 757 says, Jeff, hearing that email from the Virginia Nurses Association about, quote, underserved people, I had to drive 25 miles to my doctor. Does that make me underserved? Well, I would say no. But who knows? Who knows? How do you decide that? Hey, Jeff, 804 says, oh, it's Walt. Walt says, Jeff, we need to pray that the representative states actually understand what they read in this bill, talking about Congress people, the way that they can vote, help people take care of U.S. citizens. Well, fair enough. Debbie from Midlothian says, Jeff, I'm a nurse that works with children. I've never understood why many special needs kids are sent to school when they are unable to follow, learn, and take the test that proves retention of subjects taught. It seems it is a school-sponsored daycare. Well, I think it depends on the child. And that's what IEPs are all about, individualized educational programs. Every special needs kiddo has one of those, and let me tell you, it becomes your owner's manual, your operating manual, your SOP. Some children are absolutely capable, with some assistance, of being in a more traditional classroom. The law calls for the least restrictive situation. How do we define that? Well, that depends, I suppose, on who is defining it. I'll give you an example. Some kids are kind of on that bubble. If you were to meet Julia, number one, you would just be impressed with how unbelievably beautiful that girl is. You really would. You go, oh my God, what a cutie. And then after about, I don't know, an hour or two of just fawning all over her and realizing she's a sweetheart, then you would say, right, she is disabled, right? She is definitely disabled. She is definitely in the special needs category. There's not really a bubble for Julie. It's really easy, right? She's 22 years old chronologically, but developmentally she is 18 months old. So that's an easy one. But what if you have some other sort of a situation and there are people, and it happens all the time, I know this, people say, oh, there's nothing wrong with that kid. Why the hell are we spending money on him for special needs? Or she doesn't have any issues. I mean, come on now. And you say, well, a few things you may not see, a few things you may not understand. So I just don't think it's that straightforward in a lot of cases. Again, some cases are easy. I think that that's one of the reasons we've never really had any bad experiences with Julia's teachers or therapists through the years. Because it was never a question. Nobody in any school division anywhere said, well, you know, if she was just focused, that wasn't ever a thing. But there are kids in that situation. And there are a lot of school divisions, unlike Hanover County Public Schools, that really, really cares about the kids. There are other school divisions I know that are looking at the bottom line, looking at dollars and cents. Oh, my God, we got another special needs kid. You know how much money that's going to cost? Nah, stick him in a regular classroom till somebody complains. It happens. I wish it didn't happen, but I'm just telling you, sitting here having been through it, it happens. 515, Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA. 520, Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA. Coming up, just a couple of moments, about 15 minutes, Ryan Hudson's going to join us. Ryan is a good dude. Ryan is someone I served on the Hanover County Community Services Board with for a long time. And he's a fascinating guy. I mean, honest to goodness, you learn about his background and various and sundry professional endeavors that he's had through the years, and you go, wow, that's neat. And his latest service, because he's all about service, I learned that on the CSB with him. He is a member of the Hanover County Board of Supervisors. He represents the Mechanicsville district, and he's going to be with us. I want to find out more about what's going on with the water situation. I want to know about the Board of Ed and this doubling of salary, all that good stuff. So he'll be with us at 5:35. My friend Mindy Applewhite is going to be with us, and looking forward to that Thursday at 5:35. Mindy, career law enforcement officer. She lost her beautiful, beautiful daughter a couple of years back. Her daughter had her whole life together. Let me tell you something. Her daughter was doing exactly what any mom, any dad would want our children to do. Right? Had gotten married, had achieved the highest level of success in her chosen career. She was a nurse. She had just completed her doctorate in nursing. And then she got hit by a car driven by someone who should have been locked up, was not in prison where they belonged. Mindy, did I mention this? Career in law enforcement, parole, probation. So she's got a lot to say about it. She'll be with us. Do we have enough time here to sneak in this John Oliver? John Oliver just cannot, for the life of him, figure out exactly how Medicaid is supposed to work, or he knows exactly how it's supposed to work, but he doesn't care. Cut number one.
Also, the math just doesn't support those claims. As one analysis puts it, major Medicaid cuts are the only way to meet House budget resolution requirements. And the big way this bill tries to do that is by adding work requirements for many low-income recipients who got coverage under Medicaid expansion, effectively removing a lot of them from the rolls. Basically, under the bill, to get Medicaid, they'd have to prove they worked, volunteered, or went to school for 80 hours a month. That alone is projected to cause over 5 million Americans to lose coverage by the end of the decade. Though to hear Mike Johnson tell it, that's just not a problem, because they're just targeting one specific group.
You don't want able-bodied workers on a program that is intended, for example, for single mothers with two small children who's just trying to make it. That's what Medicaid is for, not for 29-year-old males sitting on their couches playing video games. We're going to find those guys and we're going to send them back to work.
Okay, 29-year-old males sitting on the couch playing video games? How is it possible that Mike Johnson always sounds so old and out of touch while also managing to look like a 12-year-old who dressed up as Stephen Colbert for Halloween? The problem with that argument is that most Medicaid enrollees are working. The most recent data shows that nearly 2 in 3 work. And most of the rest have a disability, are caring for family members, or are attending school. And yet, Republicans won't stop painting lurid scenarios of Medicaid freeloaders.
Well, Mr. Oliver, even you are acknowledging that 1/3 of the folks who are receiving Medicaid, these are your numbers, not mine, are not working. All right. When you look at the fraud that is in place in a lot of these programs, then you will see there's big numbers in terms of dollars. Now, you want to paint this picture because you, without any regard for the American people, because, well, I just don't think you have any regard for the American people, you think it's thoroughly appropriate for illegal aliens to be on those rolls and receive services, and you also seem to think, even though you're joking about it because you can't actually address it, that it's okay for, well, as an example, a 29-year-old able-bodied guy who chooses to stay home and get that money, get those services, and chooses not to work. We disagree. We disagree. If you are capable of work, you're capable of attending school, you are able-bodied, asking you to work for 80 hours a month or to go and find some sort of an educational program, a vocational training program, again, 80 hours a month. There's nothing wrong with that. In fact, I would tell you, sir, that these requirements are actually less than those that then President Bill Clinton heralded when he was pushing work, not welfare, many years ago. Just think about it. 525, Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA. Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA. Always interesting to hear from the state senator from Prince William. The whole idea of therapy involving actual therapy, and the senator there is all twisted out of shape. Why? Now, I mean, it would seem to me, if in fact your argument is that no amount of therapy would change, quote, who you are, whether you are gay or straight or what have you, okay, well, then no amount of therapy will change it, so there's absolutely no threat, as I can see it, from such aforementioned therapy. What it does do, however, is to silence people who have opinions and thoughts and practices that are based in counseling. I think it was outrageous when they banned it in the first place. I'm happy to hear that it's back. And this idea that somehow Jason Meares, the Attorney General of our beloved Commonwealth, is a bad guy for not defending that ridiculous law. Sorry. No, Jason Meares was absolutely right. Oh, and this evening up in Fairfax, as you know, Jason Meares, John Reed, and Winsome Sears are all going to be on stage together. Governor Glenn Youngkin is going to be there as well. The big GOP unity rally. I'm happy to see it coming about. And after it's done, my suggestion is everybody goes their separate ways, because each of those candidates on their own can cover way more territory in Virginia than all of them together. Right? Honest to goodness, we have such a big state. Major population, get out there, get it done. We really do have a commonwealth to save. I am curious to know what the developments are in terms of water discussions and pay raises here in Hanover County. Ryan Hudson is the Mechanicsville District Representative on the Hanover County Board of Supervisors. Good guy. We've known each other a long time. Happy that he's joining us. Ryan, thank you for being here.
Jeff, thanks for having me back.
It's good to hear your voice. Bring us up to speed on all of the water discussions. I know that Hanover was, I guess, having discussions with Henrico. The city had conversations with Henrico. Where are we, and what sort of progress have we made?
So the last two meetings that have taken place, I have not been privy to directly. However, I can speak to first the meeting that was held by Governor Glenn Youngkin, where he got the folks from Hanover, Chesterfield, Henrico, the city of Richmond, all in the same room. Our John Badeski, as you mentioned, celebrating his five-year anniversary with us today, and our board chair representing the Cold Harbor District, Michael Herzberg, were there for that meeting and did an outstanding job representing the citizens of Hanover to make sure that we were clear that this was a top issue for the administration of Hanover County and for the Board of Supervisors. And then to speak to the meeting that occurred on Monday between the City Council, the mayor of the city of Richmond, and the Board of Supervisors and public utilities directors, respectively, from each municipality, and of course, their county manager in Henrico. Probably like you, I've been reading the articles, and I thought that the folks in Henrico did a great job displaying leadership and not only speaking for their own constituents directly, but for our shared constituency as a region. I'll give them praise for that, and I appreciate that. So where are we in Hanover? We're doing a couple things. We're looking at developing our own water source, a reservoir for the Pamunkey from the Pamunkey River, mm-hmm. And that is obviously a long range plan, but then. Out of our meeting that we had with Henrico, we are going to be working collaboratively to develop a way for us to be able to purchase water in the event of an emergency from Henrico. Henrico has been allowed now to release more water from their tremendous reservoir that they have up there in Cumberland. So we're really multifaceting with some things. And also, you know, we had our little snafu with the water main break up at the Doswell plant that caused Kings Dominion to shut down for a day or so. And boy, I tell you what, you know, Jeff, if that sort of thing had happened at any other time, probably would not have been much of a blip on the radar, other than we've got to get it fixed as quickly as possible, which obviously they did, and our people were there and acted and got things up and running and communicated. And actually there was, I'm going to say, around 20 homes that were affected, hand-delivered water to each home with a letter explaining what had happened and that sort of thing. So it was just one of those ugh, not again kind of things that happened. But, you know, the citizens of Hanover can be rest assured that our engineers and administration and board of supervisors are working as fast as we can to get permanent long-term solutions. And I truly do believe that we will end up with some sort of regional board, but what that looks like, some other folks are going to have to figure that out before we would get a formal presentation on that. So
it's interesting.
There you have it.
When we hear, particularly the mayor, Danny Avila, talk about it, he's talking about a regional water, I guess, advisory commission, or is that the other side versus an actual commission that owns and operates? So is that where we are with this kind of in the weeds?
Correct, yeah. So, yeah, you can set up an authority, which means that we have to take over some of their debt service. And I want to make sure, be clear, that I'm not an expert in the field. I'm going off of what I have learned and understood over the last 6 or 7 months. But where if we come up with an advisory board, then that will allow us to have a say over what's happening. I saw a quote from the Verina District Representative Tyrone Nelson out in Henrico. He said, currently, we're all just customers. And so therefore, they, being the city of Richmond, they have superior knowledge about their water treatment plant. And I have no doubt that the folks want to provide good, clean drinking water to the municipalities, to their customers. But as he said, and we have said, they don't represent my constituents in Mechanicsville. And nearly 100% of my constituents were affected, except for the very few that we have that are on still on wells. And we have some Aqua Virginia customers, but even some of those are hybrid systems where they're wells and they can turn on valves and buy water from Hanover County. So, so nearly everyone was affected. And so it is critical to us that we have transparency and communication and oversight, and that we can all work together as our citizens require of us. That's why we're here. That's why we've all been elected and appointed to administrative positions and things of that nature, so that we can represent our constituencies as best as possible.
Yeah.
So.
I appreciate that. I don't know that I'm crazy as a taxpayer in Hanover County that I could possibly be in a situation to take on some of the debt service out of the city of Richmond, given what I think is not particularly great management or stewardship in the past in the city. But I guess we'll see that as it plays out. Now, and tell me about the Board of Education. Let me remind everybody, Ryan Hudson is joining us. Ryan represents the Mechanicsville District on our Hanover County Board of Supervisors. So I read this. The Board of Education voted to double their salaries. So let's dive into that. Is it true? What really happened?
It is true. And, you know, I love a headline. I've been listening and got taken on calls. But one of the things that I wanted to do when I come on your show is to help give context to your listeners. And that is that in Hanover, as you know, we overturned, if you will, three seats on our Board of Supervisors. And for the last, I'll say, since COVID, coming out of COVID, our Board of Supervisors has that's the previous board and the current board has worked very hard to make sure that our school board aligns with the people that elected us. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they are conservative or liberal. A lot of people like to label with that. My own school board member, who is also named Ryan Martin, you know, he is a straight guy, middle of the road, doesn't have an agenda. He's there for the kids. So we've worked really hard to and made some changes or allowed because I don't serve on the school board, so I want to try to articulate it properly. We made some changes on the school board that would have a direct impact on school board administration. And we feel that things are going in a very positive direction with those changes that have been made. And let's be honest, Hanover used to be Sleepy Town, USA. No one came to school board meetings. All of that has changed since COVID. And I will tell you that the Board of Supervisors, since we hold the purse strings, we had to first vote to double the school board salary. And along with that, we nearly doubled our planning commission salary as well, because they had not been, that had not been done since 2005 or 06. And this was something that was started very shortly. We had our finance team begin to look at where our boards and commissions are at across the region and the Commonwealth. I know you served on the Community Services Board, that $48.20 that we got after taxes a month. You know, none of us are there for our money. And I get the optics. The school board doubled their salary overnight. And I want you to know that there was discussion at length amongst the school board members. Do we want to roll this out in a phased manner? Well, let's talk about why that's not a good idea. Because we said in this last referendum, we don't want politics in our school board. Well, if they didn't have a lump of money in one lump sum, next year could come around and we could say, oh, there's another project that we've got to take care of. So we know that we told you we were going to give you this money, but we've got to take care of this other thing. We're going to pull that money back. And we need to not have that sort of thing taking place. They are still well behind our neighbors, as they should be. We're not as big, but I mean, I can tell you there are many times my school board member is fielding way more calls than I am. And I field a lot of those same calls that he does. So I get it. In the internal discussions, we were very concerned about the optics, but in the end, it was decided that it was the best thing for a number of our boards and commissions to just rip the Band-Aid off and let's get it over with. And I can't predict the future, but given them 20 years since anybody got any sort of adjustment, another thing that we're doing with that, that is really not with pay, but we're taking, like, now the Community Services Board in Hanover, we meet every other month. That reduces everybody's drive time, keeps the meetings more packed with information, allows the subcommittees, they meet in the interim between the meetings and that sort of thing. So not only is it some financial restructuring going on, it was also some restructuring of how these individual boards and commissions may meet in order to make them more efficient. So doesn't mean that everybody's going to like the answer. I will say that everyone that I've spoken to over the phone and in person, when I kind of let them know where we were at, they kind of get it that sort of thing. Yeah, the school board didn't kind of unilaterally just do that.
Right, right. No, and Ryan, I certainly made that clear on this program that because we do maintain an appointed board, this had to start with the Board of Supes. I think the only concern that I have moving forward, because I do think that the as you described it, the optics of it were terrible. They really were. They just were not good. But, you know, and look, you know me, and I love Hanover County, and I would do anything at all. I just don't think it looked good. But that being said, given that, as you point out, 20 years since any of these were addressed or adjusted, perhaps the next thing for the Board of Supes to do, rather than putting a future Board of Supervisors in the same situation, says, you know what, every 18 months we're going to address these issues, so there's not that shock to the system. That's my suggestion. I'm not one of your Mechanicsville district constituents, but I love the county and I think the world of
it
you,
is
so
being
passing it along.
Yeah, I think it's something that will happen on a continuum, because in a sense we did kind of pay for the sins of previous boards, and a lot of times it was done. I mean, go back to 2008. Yep. Nobody got, you know, we didn't, the previous boards didn't change our property tax assessments and that sort of thing, and have kept them. at the 81 cent level, all these sorts of things. And so everybody just kept putting it off. And another thing we want to be able to do is continue to get quality folks. Sure. I can't tell you how many people will ask me, you all have a 2 o'clock meeting. How in the world, talking about the Board of Supervisors, we have 2 o'clock meetings, which usually it's not the consequential or controversial things. It's usually reports and things that are required that we do, kind of monotonous stuff at 2 o'clock. But they go, does everybody on the Board of Supervisors not have a real job? I mean, I'm very fortunate that with my career, I can be very flexible and that sort of thing. So we want to be able to continue to get quality folks. And I just appreciate you. One, I love people being able to hear us say that we can still be friends and disagree and understand that the optics didn't look like or even feel good. I think that that's healthy for those of us that love Hanover, yeah. Honestly, as I know we both do. So, there you go. And, you know, always reach out, have me back anytime. I'm always happy to, like I say, I can only speak for one of seven, but, I enjoy getting the word out, to the folks.
Absolutely. Well, Ryan, I appreciate you being here. And, ultimately it is about our county. We both love it. Give my congratulations to John Badeski on 5 years. Gang, I went way over. Why? Because I love Hanover County and I can talk about it all day. Tomorrow morning, 6 a.m., please, please, please make sure you're listening to Richmond's Morning News with Rich Herrera. God willing, you and I get the chance to do this all over again tomorrow, starting at 3. Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA.